I'm Shane Withington, and I played Brendan Jones in A Country Prep.
And as is the rule, whenever we speak to a country practice alumni, there have to be animal interruptions. And I love that you've got birds flying all around.
Well, there's three sitting here. There's one flew over the house, I think.
It's perfect. I did see that fly in the house, actually.
Thank you now. All right.
Shane, how does a boy from Toowoomba discover he wants to be an actor?
I was first a jackaroo. My first gig was a horseman in the Gulf of Carpentaria. And I went up there and wasn't really good at it, I don't think. And I came back and my mum, I was always in the amateur theatre there. And my mum said, hey, why don't you have a look at this scholarship that was in the paper? And it was the Elizabethan Bequest Scholarship. Oh, all right, I'll give it a go.
That was a bird.
My dear friend drove me down to Brisbane. I had to rehearse two pieces, comedy and a drama and a song and dance routine. And I won it. And they said, don't tell anybody because, you know, we want to release it in the media. Words like media to a 16-year-old boy from Toowoomba. Like,
yeah.
And so I went home to mum and dad and they said, how did you go? Oh, yeah, all right. I wasn't going to tell them. And then I went to bed and they thought I did badly. And then I was lying there for a while and I said, I got it. And they went, oh. And it was $4,000 a year, which was enough money to be in the paper, like $4,000, big deal. And it was enough in 72 or whatever it was. It was enough to rent a flat, buy clothes, have to take a taxi, buy books and live comfortably and save a little bit.
And you were 16.
16. And then I went into the 12th Night Theatre Company and trained with them for a year. Then I won it again the following year. And we were the last company to tour by train from Brisbane to Cairns and back. And we'd have a carriage full of actors sleeping in those wonderful old bunks. And the carriage behind us was full of our sets and our props. And we'd pull up in the town, open the sets, put them into the theatre, build them, sell the tickets. Do the shows for a couple of nights, back on the train, move to the next town.
How fantastic. So how long were you on the road doing that before you came to Sydney and went, you know, auditioning for TV roles?
I came to Sydney. I was fairly lucky. I got a lot of guesties. So I did the 2 years there, came straight to Sydney with nothing. I owned nothing. I bought a spear gun. And I had a couple of T-shirts and a few pairs of jeans, and I supplement my desperate income by nailing the odd sad brim off Bondi. So that's how I began down here. But I still got nothing.
That seems perfect for a guy who, like, by all accounts from Twitter, loves to spend his weekend sailing. I just love that.
Yeah, I was very lucky. I came to Sydney. I got a gig on a ship called the Fair Star, and it was months and months, 6 months contract of doing three plays in repertory on board the ship. And so it had a full theatre in the bilges and a full auditorium, and we'd do three plays in repertory, like one performance a week on the ship. And then the rest of the time we had full crew privileges and full passenger privileges, and that's where I realised that every piece of water, salt water, is connected to every other piece of water. Mm-hmm. And came back and bought my first of many boats. And I've just had raptures of the deep ever since.
Right. So how did you get the call up for A Country Practice?
It was just an audition. I got my agent at the time just said, come along, there's this thing called A Country Practice. And, oh, okay, or I'll give it a shot. I'd been doing, in those days, we had Crawfords that would be making shows. We had Grundys who would be making shows. We had the ABC who were making drama all the time, and each state was different. We had Melbourne would be making its own drama. Adelaide would make its own drama. Queensland never did. But as a young actor, you could actually make a living. You'd do a voiceover, and then you'd get a play, and that would keep you going for a while. Then you'd get a TV ad. Then you'd do a guestie in Restless Years or something like that, and then you'd go and do another theatre restaurant. There was enough work for actors to be virtually employed, and my generation might be the last generation that were able to go through their whole lives actually just being actors and moving from gig to gig. We never made a lot of money. As one actor said to me once, I just want to make enough money to justify being in the industry for so long. But we made enough money to keep ourselves alive. I was taken into the JNP offices in Neutral Bay, I think they were then, was taken upstairs to meet the imposing James Gavin and the wonderful Lynn Bayonis, did my audition, and then they said, you've got the role. And James said, who do you want to play your wife? And poured out some 10 by 8s, and I went on. I think that one there.
And, so you didn't know Anne at that point?
No, but I wanted to.
Yeah.
So they didn't do sort of a chemistry read with you or anything like that? It was just a case of, you know, she looks good. We hear she's great.
Yeah, they, I don't think we did a chemistry read. I can't remember. It's a long time ago. I don't think we did. No, we just turned up on day one, basically, and there we were, and we got on famously.
Yeah.
Well, Molly and Brendan came into the series in the second block, so episode 3 and 4. Were you part of the initial sort of building of the show, or did you come kind of after those first few months?
The pilot was shot. Mm-hmm. The pilot was already shot. I think we're episode 2 we turned up. And, no, it was such a small production at that stage. It was tiny. It was, I forget, about 30 people all up. And so that was one of the beauties of the show, was we could always go straight to the writer, go straight to the editor, go straight to the director and have a chat. Now, we arrived episode 2 and it just started shooting it and building our characters from there. It was a lovely time, I've got to say. My memories of the very early days were being supported and surrounded by love, surrounded by lovely people. We were lucky, clever, to get such a delightful group of people together. There were no egos. Mm. There was no narcissists. It was just, I just remember those early days of being so blessed to be a part of this amazing show and surrounded by truly love and warmth.
Was it clear from the outset that you were part of something special, something that was going to be big?
No. I think, as a friend of mine said, you're all dipsticks like every other 22-year-old. You know, we just thought we were all actors. We'd all done our grounding in the theatre, and so we all knew how to hit our marks. We had good timing and were professionals. But we just thought, for me, that was my first big television, the biggest television thing, I suppose. Biggest television thing I'd ever done. I'd only done guesties before that. We arrived in that and we just thought, oh, okay, this is television. We didn't really know just toward the end, we had some sort of inkling that this might be pretty big because extraordinary things were happening. They'd fly us to Brisbane to meet the cast of the Country Practice Day, and they flew us up to Brisbane. And we landed on the tarmac and they said, we can't get through to the television studio because all the roads are blocked. They'll just chock up. We couldn't. Wow. They were broadcasting over the radio, please don't come anymore. We can't cope with any more people.
Wow.
And so we couldn't get to the television studio. So they brought the chopper, a helicopter in, and put our luggage in the limos, to take away and flew us to the station. And the queue was 8 deep and 2 kilometres long or something staggering like that.
That's crazy.
And we couldn't stay there forever. And they were worried that fighting might break out. Mm. So in the end, we got flown out. That was our beat. And landed on the tarmac in front of the plane. And then the plane took us home. So it was our Beatles moment.
I was going to say, it sounds like Beatles mania.
Yeah, we thought we might be onto something good then.
Shane, when you say that, you know, you were surrounded by love and support in those first few years of A Country Practice, you also mentioned that you'd all worked in the theatre. Do you think that it had something to do with, you know, there's that family aspect to the theatre? It's everybody mucking in together. Like it's usually a team in the theatre as opposed to, you know, a star doing this or a star doing that.
Absolutely. I thought we were very much a team and became very much a family and still are. That's the amazing thing. 40 years later, we're all the best of friends and there's an awful amount of love and respect for each other. I think the cast of Gilligan's Island must feel the same. The theatre thing was we did all pitch in. We were happy to grab a lamp. We were happy to do move props. We were And we were schooled very strongly by Lynn Bionis, I just can't praise enough, and James Davin and the directors. We'd get bawled out if we made a mistake, we did something wrong. Where are you? What, you are never late.
Right.
That gave us like I've got a punctuality disorder from being in that show. I'm never, ever late. And we learnt our craft and we were schooled wonderfully by Jim and Lynn Bionis and all the directors. So.
Do you have a favourite Brendan moment from the series? I mean, there's the big Brendan moment, but we'll get to that. Hmm. But do you have another Brendan moment?
The Brendan grieving scene.
Yeah.
Not the money death scene. they all blend into one. They're all, I really enjoyed, we did one episode where we went back in time and I got to ride a horse a lot.
Because being
in the background, I could ride a horse. I loved that. There was some funny Simon Brendan drunk in an elevator scenes. They were fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're all the pig, Doris. Mm. We had Doris in the back of a hearse taking her to the vet once when the man that owned the hearse was very nervous and she was sedated. In those days, it gave her an injection and she went out and he was mortified that there was a pig in his hearse. He didn't know that was going to happen, but she woke up. She came in the back of the hearse, soiled herself. Much of his horror.
Oh.
The things that went wrong were as much a joy as the things that went really right.
That's definitely a beg for forgiveness situation rather than ask first. Hire the hearse, but we won't tell them what's going to happen.
Sorry about that.
As we sort of alluded to the Brendan grieving scene, Anne decided to leave the show before you did. How did you feel about it at the time?
It's a long time ago. Mm. I would have loved her to stay with me and kept working, but I didn't want to be the last one to leave.
Mm.
I was happy to go a little longer, but we were all young. Dipsticks, as we were told, and we all thought we want to go and try another show, something new. And all the kids today, the show I'm working in now, they also want to break away after 3 years and go and try their luck. I was a little more reticent because I was having fun.
Mm.
But Annie's her own person, so.
Yeah.
Mm. Was it being on the show, were you on the show for very long without Simon, Vicky and Molly?
I think Annie went first. Simon and Vicky, I think, were still there when
Right.
They married, they brought in a new love for Brendan.
Yeah.
Which,
How did that feel?
Yeah, I always thought that was a big mistake. I would have liked him to have just sort of dressed in black and moped around the place for the rest of his tenure. But they brought in a new character and I always felt it was too soon.
Yeah.
And I think the audience would have felt that. And I said, it's a bit soon, you know, it was such a big relationship. And then we got married and wandered off like the Beverly Hillbillies in the back of the truck with all our goats and chickens and things, and that was how the character ended. But I would have liked him to remain a grieving husband. Something romantic about it.
Yeah. I think personally, I forget the new wife. I never think of Brendan's new wife. I always think of of Brendan grieving. Don't you, Kim? Like, do you think of the new wife at all?
It's an interesting one because, I'm in two minds about it because I'm sure a lot of audience members would have just wanted to see Brendan happy again and looked after as well, I can imagine, in those days. It's sort of...
There would have been lots of casseroles.
Yeah.
Can you imagine all the casseroles?
They should have done all that. They should have had him trying to jump over the pile of casseroles at the front door. I thought it was just a bit rushed out because it was such a landmark relationship.
Mm. And also such a feminist character as well, being a nurse. And you kind of think, like, I don't know, I'm probably looking too deeply into this, but, you know, sort of the single dad remarrying quite quickly, there's something of a bit of a cliche to that. No offence to all the single dads out there who have remarried after their wife died. But Brendan kind of seems like he would have been all right to go it on his own for a while.
I meet so many people who say, I became a nurse because of you.
Yeah.
Mm. So he had and the responsibility we had, because it was such an enormous fan base, they were so popular.
Mm.
And Annie took it very seriously as well, that there were people's lives, who identified with us. Mm. There were lonely people out there whose lives weren't, you know, together weren't the best. And they relied on us as their sort of pseudo family. It didn't really matter what we were doing in many cases. They just wanted to hang with us. They just wanted to say, oh, there's Brendan doing something. Oh, there's Simon Bowen. He's silly again. And there's, you know, they just wanted to, oh, the pub at Burragon and all those things. Yeah. It was such a romantic theme that people could associate and identify with, and it wasn't challenging in any way. Oh, that's not true. It did challenge people's beliefs on a lot of issues.
Yeah. But,
there was an awful lot, again, there was an awful lot of love there.
Yeah, it was done in a very gentle way, the challenging, wasn't it? Gentle.
The two brothers that were living together running the store, and he got sick, he couldn't donate the kidney, I think it was, and they were gay. It was just so many lovely things we dealt with. So,
that's been
my absolute favourite episode that you've, I've referenced that one quite a few times in the series to Mel. Well, I just was so moved by it.
I think Kim, that's only because you haven't watched the very famous episode yet of when Brendan loses his wife.
This is true. I've been holding off on watching it.
Oh, you've never seen that?
No, I was one when the show started. So,
I was one.
Yes, and I'm actually not even sure if A Country Practice was showing in Rockhampton when we moved, but I do remember I was. Anyway, I was seven when we moved from Toowoomba to Rockhampton, and I do remember telling everybody, you know that Molly's going to die, don't you? Because because I don't think Rockhampton was there yet.
Oh, no. You get run out of town for that.
Horrible little child that I was. So,
but you know, we've the scene is just so often replayed, Shane, on TV. It's sort of... It's really marked. Oh, by the way, here's me speaking for Kim. The only reason Kim hasn't watched it yet is she's waiting until, you know, we have you and Annie on the show to watch it.
I'm holding off until it holds up over the years.
I've watched it and it's so beautiful. It's both episodes. Both episodes are absolutely beautiful. It's not even just the last episode. Have you watched it recently?
No.
Right.
We haven't got a copy of it. I don't think we must go and get a copy of the series. We don't even possess one. We're reminded of it often enough. But I always say that it's not the Molly death scene. It's the Brendan grieving scene, because I had the dialogue, I had the kid, I had the kite. All she had to do was close her eyes. I did the work. She becomes a star. I've been robbed.
Can you tell us about what you remember of that day, of filming that, you know, landmark scene in Australian television?
I remember when Annie decided to go, we went in, again, being 22-year-old dipsticks, and said, hey, maybe we could write this episode or something along those lines. Like, we'd like really to take control of this. And they went, forget it. They wanted to do it their way. We knew, and again, Annie took it very serious, her responsibility to her fans and the people with leukemia. The people who were sick would write to her. She would always answer the letters. She was tremendous at that. We knew that we had a big responsibility in shooting that scene, and we knew that it was the end of an era. And we just, I think the word on the day was honesty. Let's just let it roll and turn around and just see what happens. Just how would you react if the person, the love of your life, had died before your eyes? That was the result. I don't even think we did a take two, right?
Really? I'm not surprised after watching it. It's so beautiful and raw, yet again, I don't know if I'd say gentle, actually. I don't know if it is gentle, because the show is gentle, but it's so fitting after what we've seen the last few episodes before.
We wanted the heartbreak. I know that we wanted the desolation and the heartbreak and the sense of absolute loss. In one word, Molly, basically, screamed to run up the hill. She's not here. I don't think we did a take two on it.
Right. That's wow. Did you realise at the time that it would be such a... I mean, you know, it was a changing of the era on the show. Did you realise it would be something you'd still be talking about all these years later?
No. No, I'm still surprised. I'm surprised. Look at me. I'm still surprised people recognise me. I'm 63 or whatever I am. No, none of us had any idea that it had burned onto the hard drive of the nation. And not a day goes past. Not a day goes past when someone doesn't go, thank you, for that show. Thank you for that series. And thank you too for bringing it up again. It's been wonderful.
Oh, it's such a pleasure for us. So, So after you left the show, you've done so much. You've worked everywhere throughout Australian TV and you're currently on Home and Away. How have you, because it's really interesting, you said it, that I feel like you are the best equipped probably of anyone we've chatted with on this podcast, you and Georgie Parker, to really have a view on how the industry has changed and how things are different from, you know, those halcyon days of the beginning of Country Practice with 30 people on set and a gorgeous crew that everybody got on. How are things today, you know, as an actor?
It's very different. Yeah, it's very different today. Although on a Home and Away, we're still using the same pedestals on the studio floor that we shot a Country Practice with.
Wow. Well, Georgie said that it's a lot of the same crew as well that she worked with.
Yeah.
Amazing.
What's happened now is it's a bit more corporatized, and America features heavily for all the young actors. And all the young actors now pretty much are like bodybuilders. They're very cut, which makes me feel physically incomplete whenever I do a scene with them.
Those bloody Hemsworths brothers ruined it for everyone,
didn't they? Yes. Those two. So that's a change. The professional standards that we had, I sound like an old man yelling at the sun or the moon or whatever. The professional standards we had back then were much stronger. We would never be late. We would in a theatre, we would doctor our pay. You'd lose a bit of your money. But we'd never be late. We always know our lines. Always know our lines. That's step one. Mm. And sometimes some of the younger ones. And we were aware that the job isn't just saying the word. We were learning the words and putting them in your bones is number one, of course. And then what you do with them and the character you create is why you're being paid to be on camera. Mm-hmm. That's changed. It's fast. Home and Away is very fast, the way we shoot it. But again, we've got still have some of the same crew, but the production standards are higher. They expect more and more and more and more and more. I mean, on a Country Practice shot 2 hours a week, we're shooting 2.5 on Home and Away, but still, it's I'm ranting.
No, not at all.
This is so interesting.
They expect a lot for our crews and our cast. We work very hard. Mm-hmm. We've got a bigger cast on Home and Away, but we work harder now. Mm. I feel that on a Country Practice, we had a little bit more downtime where we could relax. But the standards they expect a lot. Overseas, mm-hmm. Our overseas sales, they expect a lot from us. And they get it.
Yeah.
Shane, you always share so generously and lovingly about your former colleagues on A Country Practice on Twitter and, you know, when Lorraine died, for example. And I was wondering whether we could ask you to reflect on a couple of the characters and actors who are no longer with us for the podcast.
Oh, I may burst into tears because I'm fairly useless at this, but it'd be my pleasure.
There are two people we would have really loved to have had on this podcast that we haven't been able to, and that's Joyce Jacobs, of course. We would have loved to have her, and we were watching the pilot the other day, and there she is as an extra in the waiting room. What do you remember about her from that time?
I remember them talking about her when she was an extra in that and said she was too good to have just as an extra. That little character that she created was just too good. And imagine what would have happened if they didn't think that. Wonderful character would never have existed if she hadn't got that little extra gig during that show.
And the dynamic she brought to Bob and Cookie's pairing as well is just, it rounds
perfect
it out
balance.
So well.
If you just put those three characters in a room, that would write itself. Mm. Just give them something to do, open a packet of chips. The three of them, if they did it, it would be funny because of their perspectives and the way they acted.
Yeah.
Now, Joyce was just she's just the sweetest, most beautiful lady. And she was always, of course, all that love, all that kindness, all that caring. And I remember she used to fly with her husband in a light aircraft. In their spare time, they'd just fly around New South Wales in an aeroplane. So she was quite an adventurer. But true, she was witty and kind and never wanted anything. She said at one stage, I think we're getting paid too much. We all
don't say that. say that.
she was just happy and full of love. Again, full of love. So lucky to have her.
Oh.
I don't think I've ever seen a photo of her not dressed as Esme. And I would just absolutely love to see what she looks like. Just not as what not she looks like. Yeah.
Very similar. A friend of mine has a band called Esme and the Watts.
That's great.
What such an impact she's made.
Of course, Penny Cook, you know, was lost far too soon. And by all accounts, she was a mentor to people on set as well.
Oh, to every mentor, but not on set, to everybody. Mm. She was a power. Tough girl. Mm. she wanted her way. She got it. But her husband, David, and I have been friends forever. No, she was certainly one of the core member of the junior group of the cast. And her theatre work was unbelievable. And she just tried to, for years, tried to get her tax dollars channeled into her theatre company somehow. She tried to find a deduction to put it into the theatre. And she would hit people all over. At any time, anyone who was a CEO or an executive or someone who looked like they had a dollar, bang. I want some money from you. And she did it.
Wow,
she was an extraordinary fundraiser for her theatre company, a tremendous actress, and, of course, a very, very dear friend who was taken far too soon.
Yeah.
We were very shocked when that happened.
And, of course, you know, Lorraine Desmond, we lost her at the end of last year. Was she somebody that you kept up with over the years?
Oh, yes. We all keep up with each other.
Mm.
It's not like we have to. Oh, I should call. I mean, things happen. Some of us die and we meet, but we've always been good, close friends. There was never, like other casts, there was never a big fraction through it. There was never a fracture through it, or there was never any groups or gangs. We were all one team, one family. And Lorraine, if you needed someone to be a mentor, Lorraine Desmond had certainly been through it all. Like, she was the showbiz queen, and if we needed to know anything or ask for advice, it was Lorraine you went to. Yes, darling, she never said you went, what? Oh, look, don't worry, I never do that. Don't worry about giving that interview, or don't, I wouldn't do that. No, don't. She was, and often we'd be invited to Lorraine's home. Mm. She was always very generous, and sit around the piano with her singing.
Oh,
I think Tommy Tico was her MD, hanging out by the pool with Lorraine. If we went away anywhere, you'd hang with Lorraine, because she'd hang with the band and there'd be a lot of fun to be had. But Lorraine's wisdom will always stay with me, because every piece of advice she gave was warm and from the heart and genuine, even hard stuff you didn't want to know, Just blessed to have such a champion. And it wasn't until her funeral I realised just how much she had done.
Mm.
She wasn't and didn't talk about a whole lot, but she was like our naughty auntie.
How fantastic.
That's what she was.
What a great way to be remembered, as a naughty auntie.
Yeah.
I think you've just given us all a new life goal. Thank you so much, Shane. It's been such a delight.
Great pleasure. Lots of love to both of you.